Welcome to Movements, a broadcast where we look at stories in the news and connect them to Canada's colonial history, its democracy serving a diverse population, and its foreign affairs with a global north and global south analysis. It's a broadcast that talks about power, biases, and how all of us in the Eastern Townships can care about what's going on near and far. I'm Gabrielle, and let's dive right into what's been happening. Last Friday, September 30th, marked Canada's second annual Truth and Reconciliation Day, a statutory holiday meant to honor survivors of residential schools, those who never came home, and the families and communities impacted since. Only a handful of provinces in Canada have declared it a public provincial holiday, and Quebec is currently not one of them. Regardless, across the province, people remembered and sought to learn about the impact of these residential schools. In Sherbrooke, four higher education institutions, Bishop's University, Champlain College, Université de Sherbrooke, and Cégep de Sherbrooke, together hosted a week of truth and reconciliation events funded by PRESS, the Estrie Higher Education Hub. The week included various conferences, a documentary screening, arts and culture events, a symposium, and most notably on Friday, a walk through Lennoxville. This march was among many held across Canada, including a large one in downtown Montreal, organized by the Native Women's Shelter and Resilience Montreal. Kevin Deer, who grew up in Kananaque and is the Director of Indigenous Knowledge at the First Nations Technical Institute, expressed the importance of the meaning behind these walks. The whole idea of every child matters, and a sea of orange with all of these shirts, is about reconstructing that spiritual aspect of who we are as a people, and if all of us can fully embrace that, we are never going to repeat the sad history again, he said. This year's Orange Shirt Day comes in the context of two key events in recent months, both which are strong reminders of our connections to a colonial past. First, the visit of Pope Francis in July of 2022, and the recent passing of Queen Elizabeth II just 3 weeks ago. But before we explore this, let's go even further back.
Rules don't live by the rules. Rules don't live by the rules.
Eastern Townships is scattered with the legacy of the French and British, but also the Abenaki of the Wabanaki Confederacy. They are the traditional dwellers of southern Quebec, northern New England, and parts of the modern Canadian Maritimes. One of the Truth and Reconciliation events held last week, supported by the Estrie Higher Education Hub, was a four-hour symposium at Bishop's University, where, during a written message that was read on behalf of the Odinak, who were not able to be present that day, a map of the Eastern Townships was put up on screen, borderless, but with recognizable geographical features. Some of the most tangible ways we know the legacy of the Wabanaki in the Eastern Townships are from the names we've kept, some that were on that map. The name Kuadakuk is of Abenaki origin, meaning river of the land of pine trees. Masawipi from North Hatley means the big deep lake, and Mississauqua, multitudes of water birds. Migantik means where there is trout in the lake. Memphremagog comes from an Algonquin term meaning where there is a big expanse of water. We've also kept the names from our connections to a time of British colonization. Both Sherbrooke and Lennoxville are named after Governor Generals of British North America in the early 1800s, Sir John Sherbrooke and Charles Lennox. We can note that Queen Street runs down the middle of Lennoxville, while Rue King is central in Sherbrooke. When Pope Francis made his visit to Canada at the end of July, people called for him to renounce what's known as the Doctrine of Discovery, a legal, political, and spiritual justification by the Catholic Church to seize lands inhabited by non-Christians. The First Nations Leadership Council in BC described that the Doctrine of Discovery dehumanized non-Europeans while empires waged war and stole land, resources, and wealth that had rightfully belonged to indigenous peoples all over the world. At the symposium held at Bishop's University, two speakers, Lois Dana and David McComber, also mentioned the doctrine's impact. The Pope's visit was seen as an important step in reconciliation, as he did publicly acknowledge and ask forgiveness for the evil carried out by members of the Catholic Church in residential schools. Though not mentioned in his public addresses, he also said that genocide had taken place there. Indigenous peoples noted he did not denounce the doctrine of discovery, and more importantly, criticized that he did not apologize for the Catholic Church's institutional support of the residential school systems in Canada, that it was more than the actions of individuals. With the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, an outpour of public mourning was also joined by some conversation about what the monarchy meant to Indigenous communities. The monarch is the supreme governor, or the ceremonial leader of the Church of England, head of the international Anglican community. The Anglican Church ran 36 residential schools in Canada, second only to the Roman Catholic Church. In light of this, some looked to King Charles III to renounce the doctrine of discovery as his first official act, as the First Nations Leadership Council in the BC asked of him. Others see a place for the royal family to be more involved in reconciliation work, like Shishatshi Chief Eugene Hart, where Shishatshi Innu Nation is in Newfoundland and Labrador. Others rest the work of truth and reconciliation in the hands and the responsibility of the national and provincial government. Some have criticized that provinces held a national day of mourning for the Queen, but didn't yet have Truth and Reconciliation Day recognized as a provincial statutory holiday. Who in government are we choosing to help lead change or help continue the status quo? This brings us to our next topic, the results of Quebec's provincial elections. Before we continue, you're listening to a cover performed by Ila Sapi from Salut Québec, who just yesterday on Thursday was Bishop's first Donald Lecture of the year. It's a series that brings speakers of national and international renown to Bishop's University's campus. As most probably already know, Coalition Avenir Québec, or the CAQ, swept the National Assembly this Monday, winning 90 out of 125 seats. The Quebec Liberal Party forms the official opposition with 21 out of 125 seats. Québec Solidaire follows with 11 seats, and finally Parti Québécois with 3. Something we talk about on this broadcast is the challenge of forming a democracy that represents an incredibly diverse range of people and interests. One factor that can determine how representative a government is its electoral system. Those following the election results closely will note that the popular vote, or the actual voter breakdown province-wide, shows a rather different spread of votes across the five main parties than we see in seats allocated in the National Assembly. That is, Legault and the CAC had about 41% of the popular vote, but won 72% of the seats in government. Meanwhile, the Quebec Liberal Party, Quebec Solidaire, Parti Québécois, and the Conservative Party of Quebec each received approximately 13 to 15% of the province's total votes, not a huge margin between them all. Yet, the Quebec Liberal Party has won 21 seats, while the Conservative Party has none. Despite there being less than a 2% difference between the number of votes gained. The question of voting system reform is an old one, and not one confined to the province, and definitely not to the country. The first past-the-post system, where the candidate of a riding or district with the most votes is allocated the seat in government, can lead to disproportionate representation, as many critics are pointing out with this election. One of the alternatives is a proportional representation system, which the CAC themselves had campaigned on in 2018 and introduced in 2019 with Bill 39. Bill 39 proposed that 45 out of 125 seats of the National Assembly would be regional seats that are proportionally distributed. That is, everyone would vote on two ballots, one for their riding as they normally do, then one for their choice of candidates or party in a larger regional district. However, in April of 2021, it was announced that the government would not be moving forward with a referendum on electoral reform. And since this week's election results, Legault has reiterated that it's not on their agenda. Opposition parties have voiced their discontent. Our political system is broken, our democracy is sick, and the electoral map tonight does not reflect the political will of Quebecers, said Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois, spokesperson for Québec Solidaire. Québec Solidaire received about 40,000 more votes than the Liberal Party province-wide, but received dramatically fewer seats, about half of what the Liberal Party won in the National Assembly. This is due to the concentration of Liberal Party voters in the ridings around Montreal. Those who voted for the Conservative Party in the townships might find this relevant, as several ridings, including Richmond, Saint-François, and Mégantic, where Conservatives were the runner-up, had the Conservative Party gained more votes than the Parti Québécois and the Quebec Liberal Party, but will not see any Conservative MNA in government. Duhaime, the Conservative Party's spokesperson, posted on Twitter that the National Assembly will suffer a huge democratic deficit. Others, including Legault, may question whether calls for electoral reform are even relevant, given that none of the opposition parties came anywhere close to the CAC's 41% of the popular vote. It would have taken at least three parties' popular vote combined to match the CAC. Legault sees this vote differential as a sign of the CAC's legitimacy, and certainly in ridings such as Granby, Bro-Mississauga, Richmond, and many more of the townships, the CAC won by a large margin. It seems the question of electoral reform this year is not so much of who the winner is, but how can the runner-uppers have a fairer share in the democracy. Once again, you're listening to the voice of ELSP covering Wolves Don't Live by the Rules, originally by Willie Thrasher. You've been listening to Movement, a broadcast that talks about our colonial history, our democracy, and our foreign affairs. I'm Gabrielle, and I'll see you next week.